Welcome to The Pen and the Yad. Rabbi Michael Siegel of Aunt Shamet Synagogue in Chicago talks with author Jonathan Eig about this week's Torah portion of Yitro, getting out of our bubble and learning from others.
I see that your book on Muhammad Ali has been translated into Russian.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. Portuguese, too, and a bunch of other languages. It's been really fun to see. Never thought that I would have my name on a book in all these crazy places that I've never even been to.
Well, congratulations. I wonder about the nuance, right? So when you name a chapter, when you name you name your book, do they use the exact name? Do you have rights to that? Or can they shape it to fit more into the nuance of the culture?
Yeah, they can shape it if they want. You know, I wrote a book about the invention of the birth control pill, and one of the publishers in another country named it The Man Who Invented Sex. Totally, you know, completely different from anything that I had in mind, but they have to get my permission. But I generally assume that unless it's something ridiculous or something offensive or something that makes no sense at all, I just let them do what they think is best, given that they know the language and they know the market better than I do.
It must be a good feeling to know that you've sold the bestseller in a different country with a title like that. So the reason I'm bringing this up, the names of the books of the Torah and the books of the Parshiot, the portions of the week, are all based on kind of a very simple formula that have very little, if anything, to do with the content. The custom in the ancient world was to take the first important word of the first sentence and use that as the name of a portion or a book. So the book of Genesis begins, Bereshit bara Elohim, when God began to create. And so the name in Hebrew is Bereshit. Elish Shmot, these are the names, the book of Exodus. And the first important word in this week's portion is Yitro, Jethro. But I look to you as an author, and I imagine that you spend a great deal of time thinking about the name of a book or the name of a chapter. What are you trying to accomplish when you do that?
Well, a couple of things. The main thing is to send a message for what the subject is about. You know, you want to be very clear and communicate to your reader what to expect, what this is going to be dealing with. And then beyond that, you may try to do something more subtle. You might try to set the tone. You might try to set a certain mood or create a certain level of art, grace, try to be stylistic. But I think primarily, I mean, look at the title of my book. It's Ali, right? What could be simpler than that? This is a book about Muhammad Ali. Let's not mess around here.
Right. But you didn't call it Clay.
I could have called it Clay. You're right. I could have called it. That's the other choice is, you know, if you look at books about Martin Luther King, they often have biblical references, you know, bearing the cross or parting the waters. Those are two of the classic books on Dr. King. So often, you know, you'll see an attempt to be poetic. And I think it's often it comes down to a choice between being poetic and being plain spoken and just simply getting the message across.
So what message then is the Torah offering us? If there is a message in using Jethro as the name of the portion where the ultimate happening in the entire Torah takes place. That's the giving of the Ten Commandments. Moses goes up the mountain. The people hear the commandments. They hear the Aseret HaDibrot, and the mountain is shaking, and the people are below, and Moses is receiving Torah, and this is the most intimate, most grand, and awe-inspiring moment in any of the relationship moments between God and human beings and the entire history of the world, much less the Torah. And yet, it's not named Sinai. It's not named Revelation. It's named Jethro, who just happened to be a non-Jew. He was a non-Israelite. He was a Midian. He was a Midian priest, and he happened to be Moses' father-in-law. So that has to kind of at least open a conversation as to what goes into that, because Jethro's an interesting guy.
Yeah, Jethro's a great character. But I would have to admit that if I were naming this chapter, I would have chosen one of the other things you mentioned, you know, Revelation or Sinai or the commandments. Those are the big headlines here. You know, maybe it's just the technicality. As you said, maybe they had to pick a word from the first sentence and none of those words appeared. So they were hamstrung. But the editor in me here says, you know, let's reconsider.
Okay, well, I'll leave that to you,
God. God likes editing, doesn't he? Does he support that?
That remains to be seen. I think the Jewish people assume that's true because we are constantly interpreting, and everything is open to interpretation, including what might have been just a mechanical choosing of a name, but looking deeper. And Jethro, as you've noted, is just remarkable. His daughter becomes Moses's wife, and she is a powerful figure in and of herself. But Jethro evinces the notion of Haknasat Rachim. Moses comes to that household, and he's a stranger. He's alone. He's welcomed in. So Jethro represents all of the qualities of welcoming the stranger. He respects Moses, and he respects Moses's religion. He doesn't try and convert him to something else. And as the portion begins, Jethro also sees Moses attempting to do everything himself, not only be leader, but administrator and everything else. Jethro helps Moses, you know, begin to kind of look at how to manage. This is a course in leadership development as well. So you're looking at just a fascinating figure in Jethro. I just think there's what to learn from here in terms of where do we get Torah? Does Torah only come from Jewish sources, or, you know, is the person who is learned, is a person open to learning from everyone?
Right. Jethro comes across as a real father figure as I read this. He really feels a love and a responsibility to teach Moses, to advise him, to tell him the truth, to speak to him bluntly when it's called for. There's a really powerful relationship there. I think one of the strongest and most interesting relationships we read about in the Torah. The fact that this book is named for Jethro is telling us just how important he is, that we don't have Moses without Jethro, perhaps.
Well, we may not have really Judaism without Jethro, in a way. Starting with your assertion that we don't have Moses without Jethro, that I think that there's tremendous truth to that. I've never considered that before, but in a way, if Jethro hadn't saved Moses, opened his home, given him a place, then the revelation by the burning bush may not have taken place the same way. So there's an argument to be made there. But I would take it just a step further here and say that Judaism is not a religion for Jews alone. The revelation at Sinai is not only a revelation for the Jewish people, but it is a revelation for all people. And that is understood by the rabbis in the fact that Sinai, it is an area that is not owned by any one people. It is open to all, right? It wasn't as if the Torah was given in, you know, in Jerusalem. It wasn't given in Israel or Palestine. It was given in this wilderness. And so it's open to all people. Anyone can accept the Torah. The portion begins with Jethro giving instruction before the Torah is given. Is a very clear statement that wisdom can be found beyond Sinai. And if we're open to it, then we can truly become wise and enriched. If we're only focused on what we can learn from a certain area, from a certain group, from a certain author, from a certain point of view, then we are going to be truly bereft of knowledge.
Yeah, that's really powerful. And I think you're right that this is not only about the Jews. There's a great love between these two men. And it has nothing to do with their relationship by marriage. And it has nothing to do with their religion. It's a testament to the power of love, for the willingness to do for others. And then that's expressed in the religion. But it comes between these two men in such a powerful way that changes both of their lives.
In every possible way. But what's interesting is that there is a tradition that Jethro converts. He becomes a Jew by choice. But there's another tradition that teaches that he didn't. Moses invites Jethro to come. He says, this is a great enterprise. Come with us. And Jethro says no. And Moses respects the decision. And Jethro respects the fact that he's not going to see Tzipporah, his daughter, again. He's not going to see his grandchildren again. They're going on their own adventure. But there is this deep respect and partnership, and the fact that you can give to the other and help shape the other, that I think is so important. And I guess the point I want to make here, and I want to underscore, is that while Judaism is open to people who want to come under the wings of the divine presence, under the covenant, for sure. But at the same time, we respect his teaching. Forgive the term. We respect his Torah, his instruction, his approach, and we can learn from that. And I can't overestimate just how important this idea is in our own world, where we are living in our own individual bubbles and, you know, reading whatever we read without being willing to kind of get beyond it. Because if I quote this author or if I quote this writer, then I must be X. And if I'm X, then I can't relate to you.
Yeah, it's one of the things that our 20th century Moses was criticized for. Martin Luther King was often criticized for trying to reach out to too many groups to believe that he could convert the hearts of those hardened segregationists in the South and that he could work with white liberals in the North, even though they were still segregating their own schools in more subtle ways, that he could work with the radical elements of the Black Power movement, that he could make them all come together, and more importantly, that he could make the world a more loving and peaceful place by the force of his message. And he was criticized for being naive in that. But isn't that the same message that we're hearing from Jethro and Moses, that you can make the world a better place? You don't have to join the same religion to be on the same side of God.
Right. And if you kind of think about it from Jethro's perspective, here he is witness in some way to God's presence, the God that Moses represents. He understands. Moses has explained to him the plagues. Moses has explained to him that the sea splits. Moses is about to go to Sinai and stand before God. So he has to be kind of aware of this kind of close up. And yet, he has the courage of his own convictions. He does not follow this. And there's no indication that Jethro goes with Moses. And so we respect that. It's not my way or the highway. It's not either or. It's either and or. And that's the beauty of the relationship and the respect and the growth that Moses undergoes under Jethro's tutelage, that is what we can celebrate in our world today. And I think that that is such an important point. And I really appreciate you bringing in Dr. King here, because I think it's something that we've lost in our own society. I can't say one good thing about this person or anything they've done, or I'm going to be pasted as a socialist, or I'm going to be pasted as a fascist, or whatever terms we want to put in the middle. And we are less of a society as a result of that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to agree with somebody and you don't have to be just like them to love them.
We did a program yesterday, very fine program with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, and looking at the Abraham Accords and how it affects Morocco, which is now signed, which is a country that's signed on. And it was a very, very interesting and powerful conversation. It's not going to be online, so I hope that people will take a listen, because there's some fascinating people that are talking on this from Morocco and around the world. And it's an important moment. But at one point, someone mentioned, yes, this was, the person had to qualify what he was saying, is a past ambassador to Morocco. And he said, well, you know, I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I work with Joe Biden, and I stand with Joe Biden, and I'm hoping to be part of the Biden administration. But I do have to acknowledge that the Trump administration did something very, very good with the Abraham Accords. Think of how he had to get to that statement, how all the qualifiers he had to put in there to be able to say, yes, this was a positive thing.
Right.
And it is a positive thing. The Jewish community sort of split on this because so many are troubled by the messenger, by President Trump. So they can't acknowledge, whatever you think of President Trump, whatever side you are, from the Middle East perspective, the fact that Bahrain and the UAE and Sudan and Morocco and very likely Saudi Arabia will enter into a pact with Israel changes everything in the Middle East. And it is a remarkable day of cooperation from science to culture, et cetera. The fact that Israelis are traveling in droves to places like Dubai, you know, who would have thought that? But it's happening right now. And I believe that it is actually going to benefit the Palestinians, because in a more secure environment, Israel will be much more open to some sort of arrangement. And I also think that the countries in the Abraham Accords will support it. But all of this has come in a very positive way when unlikely partners have come together. And so I think there's a lesson there about Jethro and Moses. I don't have to accept everything in the Trump administration, just as you don't have to accept everything in the Biden administration. But that doesn't mean you can't celebrate a moment. I'm interested in your thoughts on what I just said.
Yeah, I think one of the things I talk about a lot is that we always say, you hear this in the news a lot these days, you say, history will not be kind to those who blah, 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 right? Or history will prove that blah, 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 blah. We have no idea what history is going to prove. We have no idea how the Trump presidency or the Clinton presidency or the Biden presidency will be remembered or perceived 50 years from now. We don't know which mistakes are going to turn out to be strokes of genius. We don't know which strokes of genius are going to turn out to be mistakes. We have to be humble in acknowledging that we don't know these outcomes. We don't know the meaning of what's happening today and how it's going to be reflected, you know, 50 years from now. And I think this is a great example of that. It could be that we will acknowledge that this president that we despised, whether you're talking about Trump or Biden or Clinton, whatever, might have done something that we didn't perceive at the time that turned out to be more important than anything else. And that requires us to be humble and open-minded, I think.
And to ultimately believe that we don't have all the answers and that we not be trapped in our own narrow philosophy, but be open to agreeing to disagree, but also agreeing to listen. And that's clearly what Moses and Jethro did in their time. And it's a good lesson for ours. Thanks so much, Jonathan.